Yeah, okay.
There we go.
Great.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Welcome to the podcast,
Welcome.
Everybody.
How many pod?
Episode 19.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Today we have a very special guest. We have Max Webster.
What's up, everybody?
Max is Barry, a Bitcoiner, part of the Barry, a Bitcoin crew.
As every guest, every basically.
Yeah. And he is a Lightning VC. Mm. He has a broad portfolio of rare and exotic Lightning companies.
That is true.
Yeah, like Pokemon, like rare Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about, you know, the shiny ones. They're all shiny, They're all shiny,
Yeah. We're also going to talk, he's an article relatively recently out, talking about how to disrupt Google.
We're
going to talk about that as well.
Yeah, Google's dying. It's dead.
Google's dying.
Strong NGMI vibes on Google.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, truly.
Consensus at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. No, this is something I thought about a lot before even getting into Bitcoin, and like sort of lured me into being into like Web3 crypto, had this feeling like legacy social media was done.
Mm-hmm.
I quit like social media in 2020 because I was just like, I hate it here. Everybody hates it here.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a part of it.
Yep.
And then like kind of, the like sort of marketing around like Web3 and like, I don't know, that sort of stuff just made me excited about the future and kind of just, I don't know. I think people think that companies like Facebook and Google will be around forever because there haven't been like that many major internet companies yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I mean, civilizations rise and fall, empires rise and fall, companies rise and fall.
Yahoo is kind of gone at this point.
Right. But I think people forget, like, I think because like Facebook feels so ingrained, like companies like Facebook or Instagram or whatever feel so ingrained in people's existences.
Yep.
They like don't know how to imagine that like something like Google would not exist.
Facebook in particular
anymore.
Feels pretty fucked in the long term.
NGMI,
absolutely. Yeah, NGMI.
Yeah, and I should also just add in there, like I'm actually a Google fan, believe it or not. I think they have by far the smartest people by far. Like a lot of my friends are Google. I think Google's actually pretty awesome. I do think they're vulnerable in this one thing that we'll talk about, but they could also adopt, like that's also possible. They could, you know, adapt a little bit. I think that's more likely from Google. Facebook, I get much stronger NGMI vibes from, but I thought Google Search is Dying was a better title. So
Yeah. I don't know. Actually, I mean, I actually think that Facebook is maybe better positioned to accept that Lightning is a good idea, right? Like they did Libra, which are totally doomed projects to create like some weird Facebook stablecoin. And this thing happened where it turns out we're at a time where both parties can get points by dunking on Facebook in congressional hearings. And so they just called Mark Zuckerberg to congressional hearings, and then senators took turns like dunking over him and photographing each other like in the air, like lifting off. And then Libra and Diem like both totally died, but they have a lot of users in tons of different countries.
Totally.
They certainly would love to add some sort of payments product to their service. They can't really launch a traditional like stablecoin or Venmo style payment service in a bunch of countries. Like what can they do? They can give everybody a Lightning wallet, right?
And to be clear, it makes a lot of sense for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more, I just, my own personal bias, I like Google more, so I hope they do it and stick around.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, we'll see.
I know, vibes-wise.
Vibes-wise,
like
Google
Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook.
It's going to be the first to, Can you give like a brief summary of your article or kind of like the main points for?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the gist of it is like, so how did I even start? I'm always reading about new things that excite me. And I came across this post and it was this kind of random pseudonym on the internet, DKBS, random numbers, 42069, something like that. And he basically was making this argument that Google search is dying. And at first I was like, okay, that seems a little hyperbolic. There's no way this is true. But then I started reading the post and a lot of things resonated with me. One thing that resonated is, he pointed out all these other people that were pointing this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have, the YC guys, Paul Graham and Michael, the guy that runs it now. And they were basically both complaining about, kind of the lack of good user-generated content around things like recipes and, health problems. You probably shouldn't be Googling if you have health problems in the first place, but apparently that's one area that it's gotten a lot worse. But what really clicked it for me was there's this one, screen that Paul Graham had tweeted out where it shows social networks over time and it shows their usage increasing, right? And with Paul Graham, he was like, oh, like Reddit's not dying. It's the only one that keeps growing slowly.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And this guy's point was like, well, it's not because people are using it as a social network. The reason that it's growing like that, or at least in Google searches, is because people are using Reddit as their search engine.
Yeah, I do that constantly. You don't actually go and search on Reddit, but you type like best foobar in Reddit. Google Reddit, and to get read posts from Reddit.
100%. And so this resonated with me so strongly because, like you, I think I've done this for like 90% of my searches in the last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Literally, I only search.
Whenever I'm, yeah, and also it, like the decline in the quality of Google search results is also similar to the decline in quality in Amazon product reviews.
Okay.
Like it used to be that you would search for something on Amazon and then you just sort by rating and the top rated thing would be like the best option by far.
Right.
But then a ton of different like producers of Chinese goods and also resellers of Chinese goods started gaming the system. They'd start like adding their own, like reviewing their own products. To these days, to the point where like the top rated reviews on Amazon, that's actually like a negative signal. Like the things at the very top of the product category are like likely to be the worst products. And you have to really like carefully scrutinize things. And so when I want to buy something on Amazon, a lot of the time I go, like I want to buy, you know, like a coffee maker. I don't go on Amazon and search by best coffee maker. I go to Google and go like best coffee maker Reddit.
Reddit.
Mm-hmm. Right?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And so when I saw this, I said, well, wait a second. I do this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw that his post obviously got a lot of traction on Reddit and then on Hacker News. And in Hacker News in particular, it's now the 11th most upvoted story of all time. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was like, okay, cool. All the nerds, the online vanguard, everyone mm-hmm. is doing this. Like, yeah. This is an open secret.
Right.
And then I started thinking, okay, well, if you've got whatever, all the vanguard that's open to using something else besides Google, what's a way to do this better? And so this guy, he came up with another post, this pseudonymous author, and he proposed what I thought was a genius insight. And his insight was, okay, Google, for those of you who don't know, I'm sure everyone has a basic idea, but you know, the first version of the Google search algorithm was based on PageRank,
right?
Which is essentially analogous to the world of academia. I have a research paper. If it's backlinked or cited in other research papers, it must be good.
Yep.
You know, the more it gets cited, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And now, obviously, there's a lot of other things that are taken into account, yep. but that's the general, like, just... Well, his
So pages, if one page links to a lot of, if one page gets linked in a lot of page places, it'll climb up the Google search ranks.
Exactly. Because
presumably okay. it's a better page.
Yeah. Exactly.
And this was like the big insight. I don't know. Do you remember what search engines were like before this?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Dogpile, Ask Jeeves.
Alta Vista.
Yeah.
I remember typing something in, like something really obvious. Like I wanted to learn about the philosopher like Hobbes.
Oh, yeah.
And like it was just like trash. It was just like absolute trash. It was totally unusable.
Yeah, totally. And so, you know, so, okay, that's the core inside of Google search. Mm-hmm. Well, his idea was, well, we could do something better. And what we could do better is market rank. Mm-hmm. And that just intuitively clicked for me. It's like, okay, cool. Of course, that makes sense. Market mm-hmm. rank. Markets are great. Like, you know, in theory, surfacing information when you have surfacing signal when you have free markets. But the problem is he spent like the rest of this post being like, well, his proposition was we can determine the market value of something in a knowledge marketplace. And mm-hmm. I think maybe I call it knowledge marketplace, maybe he didn't. But that's essentially Reddit, Quora, Stack Overflow,
mm-hmm.
all of these, you know, various forums.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that makes total sense. But then he spends like the rest of this post. Like he has literally everything figured out except mm-hmm. the last critical missing piece. And you know, he's like, well, how do we normalize likes across right. space and time?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what is a like on Twitter yeah. versus
a, because know? There are very different like economies, right?
Extreme.
Like I've noticed that Twitter, it's very hard to get likes.
Yes.
On Facebook, it feels kind of like medium hard to get likes.
No, and it's like spammy likes. It's like you're like
yeah. Like. And then on Instagram, it's really easy to get likes because of the way the user interface works. You just like double tap a picture, and so people just scroll, and anything that they're like, oh, that's okay. They'll like it,
yeah.
right? So what is a Reddit upvote worth? Like
yeah. exactly, and so and it reminds me a lot of like, hey, like we have this problem in the normal economy. Like, how do you mm-hmm. compare pesos and dollars? And it was like, well, wouldn't it be beautiful if there was this like, you know, single native currency of the internet, the one that could be used at the speed of light
uh-huh.
instantly anywhere with no walled gardens? Man, that sure would be awesome. It's like, all right, fuck it, we got to write this article. Like. And so that was basically insight. I was like, yo, knowledge marketplace is dope, mm-hmm. but it would be a lot better if you used one currency that could be normalized mm-hmm. across.
Right. Yeah. Sats are the standard. Yeah.
Sats are the standard.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if we want to pause there, but the next question that I asked was, okay, so imagine you want to determine the market value of this information.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so you could basically say, well, maybe Twitter or Facebook or whatever, Reddit, mm-hmm. maybe they'll, you know, see Satoshi, see Jesus, whatever, come to Satoshi. and they'll integrate Lightning themselves and they'll do this. But that's like, for a big company, that's a really foundational switch to make. Maybe if Jack had stayed at Twitter, maybe, but I just don't see it happening. Right. Mm-hmm. And Reddit's now got their gold, but that's like another walled garden, garden currency. Maybe it's ERC-20. I don't know. But the point is, like, I just don't see it happening. Mm-hmm. So then you say, well, what would be the right way if you wanted to start with a very specific beachhead to do this? Mm-hmm. And I think there's many different ways, and I propose three in the article. The first way that I'm really excited about is you just create a new knowledge marketplace. Mm-hmm. And Satoshi tipping is at the core. Mm-hmm. And so the one, obviously, that I had talked about to show as well is one of my core investments, which is Stack Overflow. Stacker News, which I love because, and Keon's doing a lot of things with trust. It's not just... Satoshi Signal, but Satoshi Signal is one of the key signals there. Because everything you do, it's like Reddit or, Quora, but you upvote with Satoshis. And so I think that that's probably like the most direct way to attack this is just rebuild one of these forums, but have that tipping be like a core feature.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting. One thing is, how would you, if you have all these sites doing tipping, is the idea that you would somehow aggregate that together in like a search engine? They would see like, and that gets challenging because then how do you know that all of the tips are actually real?
Right.
Then you have sort of like fraudulent, tipping sort of.
Exactly. So this is what we're starting to explore next. And to be clear, I don't have all this solved. Mm-hmm. The homie Casey here ends up wanting to run with one of these ideas. You may have a much better idea. Seriously. Anybody out there watching or listening, if you got a great idea, hit me up. We don't know how to do this yet, but the Satoshi rank is going to be part of it. So I think one way you could do is you could just...
I love the idea of Satoshis as this neutral unit of value for things, even if they aren't necessarily like normal transactions that you buy or sell things.
Totally.
Well,
I mean, this has always been the thing for me, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but whenever I hear like... the Chris Dixon skeuomorphic thing, where he's like, it was cool when you put the New York Times online, but much cooler when you could do something brand new like Twitter. Mm-hmm. I just substitute all of his Web3 silliness with Bitcoin, and it all makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah.
The most interesting things here, it's like, of course, old payment networks will get moved to Lightning.
Yeah.
That's table stakes. What's interesting is the new things you can do, right? Like the knowledge marketplaces. Right.
It makes me also think about prediction markets.
Oh, yeah.
Like essentially, if you could bet on which product you thought was best, if there was also like not just that you could spend sats to upvote something, but if you could also sort of bet in such a way that you could potentially make money on betting on the best thing.
Oh, I love that.
Right? I don't know exactly how that would work, but you could imagine like people betting on what products would be reviewed or ultimately get the most like upvotes. Like,
so that is a great idea because part of the way, and to be clear, today the way Stacker News works, and we'll talk more about this, but like Satoshi Signal or Satoshi Rank or Value Rank, whatever you want to call it, it's only one small element of the grand picture. You also need identity. Identity is absolutely critical. There's different ways to get that identity. A lot of what he's doing today is still based on this web of trust. Identity piece, Satoshi Rank is just one small signal. Mm-hmm. But one of the ideas is like, part of the reason people upvote on Stacker News right now, part of it is altruism or value for value. Mm-hmm. They just want to support. Cool.
Right.
And I think if you get a large enough community, 1%, like with Wikipedia or whatever, is probably enough. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people upvote, myself included. Like I find myself upvoting more and more because part of their current algorithm is if you upvote something early, right?
Yep.
And then later on that becomes way more popular, you get a higher payout of rewards.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But you could also do exactly what you're talking about, which is just like you have prediction markets saying for all of this content, put your money where your mouth is a bet, and you can have like payouts.
Well, in a sense, that's what if voting on something early that turns out to be popular gets you more sats, then that does have the fundamental like important parts of the prediction market.
Yeah.
Do you know how their like sats back work? Like, because I'll open my Stacker News account usually a few days after I've made a post, and it'll be like, oh, like we just give people sats sometimes. And you have like 1,000 sats in your account now, or like an extra 1,000 sats. It's like they give people, if you're just active on Stacker News, then they'll like reward you, even if you didn't necessarily get those as your post being upvoted.
Well, Keon's always like kind of tinkering with this. And if you follow on Stacker News, he'll usually like post the latest ideas or kind of iterations on there. Yep. And eventually I think the plan is, or at least I hope so. Speak for Keon, but like to open source some of this so people can build their own algorithms, which again, once you have value rank data and identity data, people can build their own Googles on top of all that, which is where I'm really excited. But currently the way it works is they have two major income streams for the site, which is a jobs board. And then they have boosts, people that pay to boost their stories.
Right.
And so that money gets repaid out to contributors in the site.
It
goes to early upvoters.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. That's fascinating.
Dude, I was dope. Like the other day I posted my little story and like I made whatever 5,000 sats from time. So I was like, that's kind of cool. But then I got paid like an extra 6,000 or 7,000 sats from the site because the story was popular.
Right.
Like, okay, I mean, you know, this is starting to be, you know, it's not nothing.
Yeah.
No, that gets into, I mean, really the thing that's exciting to me, because I feel like you're coming at it from more of a technical standpoint or a market standpoint, maybe. I think of this as just being a creator and a user.
Yes.
And I think, like, I personally, I love TikTok. I feel very passionately about TikTok. I mean, not for, like, moral reasons.
Give me
but...
that CP penis.
Yeah. Exactly. But as, like, as someone who makes content, TikTok is the place to be. It's and TikTok is always like that's the number one creators platform by far right now. And I think a lot about like why
How does monetization on TikTok work?
So they do have like an ad-based creator fund, much like YouTube does. Mm-hmm. But the main way that you make money on TikTok is either through like sponsorships, which is again like typical, or tipping, which is more similar to Twitch.
Interesting.
So like Twitch and TikTok have a lot of features where you can tip creators when they're like live or just for their video or whatever. So that's the majority of how people who are big on TikTok make money.
How does that work? Like, do you have to like, you put in a credit card? Can you do micropayments or no?
Yeah. So there, so you basically, TikTok has like its little currency thing that like you buy a certain amount and then you can like dole it out basically to creators. So they essentially have their own little like currency thing. But that I think is relatively new and you have to be like at a certain threshold to like be able to get those tips. But I mean, so the monetary side is definitely interesting, but I think like TikTok's algorithm and the way that TikTok promotes and gets your content out there, it's like the best way to build an audience. Like Instagram is so hard to build an audience. YouTube is so basically everywhere. It's so hard to get
TikTok,
people to see
your stuff. It's like TikTok wants to promote you. When you, if you're on TikTok, even if you're like a very tiny user and you put out a piece of content, TikTok will essentially like audience test it for you. It'll like put it out in front of some users like, okay, maybe the algorithm makes a guess that it's like this kind of content. So it'll put it out in front of users that like that kind of content, like see how it does. And so it's very good at surfacing content, even from people who are totally like unknown small channels.
Because the whole so the whole thing is algorithmic. Like if you go on like Twitter, Instagram, like whatever, some percentage of your feed, probably most of it is people that you follow, right? That you've chosen, I want to see content from these people. TikTok does have a page for people that you follow, but primarily what a follow is telling TikTok, I want more content like this. It doesn't mean that that person's going to show up on your For You page, your homepage. It just tells the, everything that you do on TikTok is just about telling the algorithm what you want more of. And so like, and TikTok does things like the first 5 or 6 videos that you post, it boosts extra because it's trying to get you out there and find your people. And then once it knows where to put you, it's like, I mean, like I've gotten like millions of views on videos on TikTok, which is insane to think about.
Which is incredibly hard on YouTube. You don't go viral on YouTube like that.
No,
like
exactly. Nobody does. Exactly.
This is both fascinating and terrifying.
Yeah,
it's nuts. It's
But it makes sense. It's like, it's so bad as a creator on other platforms where you're like, okay, I just want to kind of like make content and get it out there. But actually like on YouTube, you need to turn it into a full-time job of essentially of marketing yourself. Whereas on TikTok, it's actually doing that job for you.
But I don't understand, why is TikTok, so I get that they're algorithmic, but is it that they have a larger user base? Or like, how is it that they're able to get your stuff out and not, and YouTube doesn't? Or like,
well, maybe it's partially
For you, the difference between YouTube and TikTok is video length. So I think for YouTube, it's like, and that's why YouTube is like, I mean, basically every app now is just trying to be TikTok and implement short form video content. But I think that's TikTok's edge over YouTube is that the videos are a minute long.
It's short.
So you can view so many more.
Yeah. It's short term video content. And then everybody uses TikTok in the same way, which is scrolling through the feed. And so they're able to like insert you into so many different feeds to like try out your content and see who it resonates with.
Is this, I mean, this is probably a little out there, but I don't know the specifics of the monetization. monetization here, but is it that YouTube only wants to monetize off the major players? Whereas is there a possibility that TikTok doesn't care about monetization, just data collection?
I think that YouTube is just bad at it. I think YouTube is just bad at it. They haven't mastered the format. It's kind of like a big investment to click on a YouTube video from the main thing. You're like sort of going away from what you were doing into like a video, which might be rather long. Whereas TikTok, like, you're already browsing this feed, so TikTok can insert something into the feed that you'll just see.
And honestly, I think, like, so I guess this is sort of getting at back what you were talking about with, like, more of your, like, Satoshi Lightning Network social media thing, is I think that, like, just on a very basic, like, non-algorithmic level, TikTok has better content because people want to make content on TikTok, and it's just, there's, like, so much more user-generated content, which is just going to be better.
Does TikTok, when you get sponsorships on TikTok, that's entirely off the platform with a third party, right?
They you can do it through TikTok. TikTok does have like a marketplace where they can set you up with people, and then you can also do it separately. So it kind of depends. Like a lot of people do a mix.
Do you know why do people not do it exclusively through the marketplace?
TikTok definitely takes a cut.
But this is kind of weird, like, because if TikTok took less of a cut, then more people would do it through the marketplace. You just think that, like,
I think it's just also just people are used to having deals with brands and stuff. And it's just, and like, you know, maybe it's like, oh, post on Instagram, post on TikTok. Like, maybe the deal is not just TikTok exclusive.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's more that, like, for the TikTok marketplace, like, a brand will be like, I want 10,000 people to make posts. And then you're like, okay, like, I'll apply for that. And then they're okay, we'll pay you this much to do
that. Maybe we should do that for the pod.
What would we do? That's a goal. I want to be on TikTok.
We'd pay people to react to our dumbest clips.
Well, okay.
We'd just, like, post dumbass clips and be like, we need you to do a TikTok duet to our dumbass content. Here's a penny, slave.
Not touching that one, but real talk. I mean, if y'all want to experiment with this, have you tried, uploading like via Fountain? Have you tried their listen to earn feature yet?
Yeah, we're on Fountain. What do you mean their listen to earn feature?
Bro, this is game changing. And so I want to come back to TikTok to understand the economics here, but you can basically, instead of ads, right? Mm-hmm. You run an ad, get someone to listen to your podcast.
Right.
You just pay people to listen.
Ooh.
It's game changing.
See, we've talked about this. Aaron is very against, artificial promotion.
Yeah.
We haven't done any artificial promotion of the podcast.
I'm not, well, we've done promotion though.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I love organic, but this is a little different, right? Because you're
tell me more, Max.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, it's going to replace, because, okay, when you pay for an ad, like, look, everyone hates fucking ads, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, you get an ad and then you pay for an impression, then a click, then the download, like all these different things, but you just want people to listen to your podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
So instead, you just cut all of that out. This is about to disrupt the ad industry.
Well, and we want Bitcoiners to listen to our podcast. Bitcoiners. So it really does make sense. Yeah.
And we have actually been making some money off of Fountain. I think Fountain is our biggest revenue stream. Yeah.
Let's go.
That's a good idea.
Okay. There we go.
Do you need to make specific clips that you want people to watch, or do you just say, like, watch the podcast? Listen to the podcast.
I know you can do the clips, but I'm not sure on the podcast. But we can find all this out.
Yeah, okay. We'll do some.
I like that.
Do some looking
into it.
It's
dope, dude. It's dope.
Yeah. No, I love
that. And I want to understand, though, for this TikTok thing, like, okay, obviously the superstar is making a lot of money, but, like, how much is someone, like, I don't know, with, like, 10,000 fans? Like, how much money can you make on there?
Not a lot.
You're about that size, right? Yeah.
30, but 30, like,
30,000.
Hey, let's go.
just through TikTok. Well, it's different. I don't do like ads on TikTok just because, but like through TikTok, I probably make like $2 a day. It's like nothing.
I mean, in Somalia, that's like, you're doing pretty good. You're like a little warlord down
but
there.
that's how much TikTok pays for like just views is like. But it's all variable because it's not based on followers. It's like, how often do you go viral?
Right.
Which is
a very
different question.
It's so interesting that, like, I mean, you'll post a video every once in a while to get like multiple millions of views, right?
Yeah.
And then, but then your average sort of views is very low.
Yeah.
And you kind of, you don't see that on YouTube. Most of the time, content comes from big accounts that have pretty similar view counts per video, which kind of indicates that on YouTube, you're like building a brand. And then you're getting like consistent followers. But on TikTok, they're like, oh shit, somebody, some rando from 15-year-old from Ohio posted a video.
Yeah.
Like, maybe people want to watch it. Maybe everybody wants to watch it. Let's like push it out there and see, like, okay, can it go viral?
And one thing that's been really interesting that I was just talking about like this morning, and then I read your article and I was like, oh my God, synchronicity, is that I've noticed that TikTok has started to roll out this feature where if you scroll through the comments and you see like a commonly searched term, it will appear like a hyperlink with like a little like magnifying glass. And if you click it, it will search it on TikTok.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like the idea with this is that TikTok is trying to replace Google as like a search engine for 10 to 25 year olds.
Uh-huh.
That's like literally like
what. Wait, how does this work?
So basically like if you're watching a TikTok on some topic, like TikTok is slowly trying to encourage you. They're trying to encourage users to use the search bar more. So like if you're scrolling through the comments, someone will like comment something and then like one word in their comment that's like a search term that they want you to search will be like a hyperlink and you click it and then it takes you to the TikTok search bar and searches that thing and shows you all the videos that are
relevant. And then you just get like more videos.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just insane.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, like the internet used to be like people sending emails to each other and now it's just like a search engine of videos and like,
And now like the
Brave New World,
the strategy, the strategy for creators now is that you're supposed to make videos that are SEO. Cause that used to not be as much of a thing on TikTok, like the search engine optimization.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be like, make your video short and with a trending sound. And like, there are these sort of strategies to kind of just get people to, if your video is short, people will watch it over and over. And so that like boosts your views and it makes TikTok like keeps, there's all these little tricks, but now the trick is make your video caption and the, like when you do subtitles, make them search engine optimized because that's what TikTok is boosting now.
Huh,
like TikTok is trying to become a search engine.
Wild.
And it's, I noticed that too, for me, like, I don't like how you guys are saying you like look up like blah, 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 Reddit on Google. Like,
yeah, on Google. Yeah.
I just go to TikTok and I look up whatever thing I'm searching
That's
for.
That's insanity.
Yeah. Well, I like don't use Google.
But I mean, like, but I mean, if you want to buy, if you want to buy something on Amazon, do you search for
No. But if I'm looking up like how to blah, 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 or what is the, like anything that I want to know information on, actually medical stuff. If I'm like blah, blah, blah symptoms, like I'll look it up and then I'll be like, do you have these symptoms? Like literally
die 12 hours. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I have a lot of theory. I have so many thoughts and theories on like this whole situation, but I think part of it is that I think people are fed up with like institutionally generated content.
100%.
Like people want to see stuff like a Reddit post that describes perfectly their situation and then people talking about it in the comments.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
that to them is so much more helpful than like a WebMD article that just sort of like clinically describes something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's what TikTok is. You just watch it. You go on TikTok, you see, oh, that girl looks cute. I wonder what she has to say. And then she like describes your thing to you and you're like, comment, like it's so much more, that's what people want.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, right.
Well, I think, yeah, it's definitely part of this like larger trend to your point, which is that, I mean, the internet used to be awesome. And I feel like right now I'm going to come across as like some, you know, old
massive
man,
boomer.
Like get off my fucking lawn. And like, I'm with you. Like I'm more of a text person. I think the video thing is just like some people are video, some people are text. Totally fine. But what sucks, I mean, the beauty of the internet is what I still love about Twitter is if you can find that kind of like bizarro account that really drops some like interesting, exciting insight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, for me, that just brings so much pleasure and excitement.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're on the mainstream internet, you just get, like you said, you get all the stuff, you know, it's corporate, you know, it's been SEO optimized, you know, it's, and people want, I think people crave authenticity.
Totally.
And I think, you know, so one of the ideas discussed in this other article I was talking about was like this, like kind of like hairballed 4chan dead internet theory, which is that the internet's all fake. It's all bots now.
Oh,
I don't buy that, but like, it's kind of like,
it's fun.
Directionally correct.
Yeah. Directionally, it is correct.
Yeah. It feels that way.
I mean, everything is like when it, a metric that, like if you have a metric that turns into a target, it ceases to be a good metric.
Yes.
So Google had this like organic search ranking thing that worked really well, but it was developed for the internet that existed before Google developed that as a ranking system.
Yeah.
And then everybody optimized for that ranking system and ceases to be good, starts to be gameable. Same with like Amazon reviews, right? So I don't know. I like expending money to upvote things, or like expending money is a like, feels like a much less gameable metric, like the least metric,
totally.
Least gameable metric.
And to be clear, there are clear ways to game that. Like one of the things I was concerned about, right, was like, I mean, imagine Philip Morris just like throwing a shit ton of money and be like, cigarettes are great for you. You know, like that's obviously very scary.
Right.
And that's why I think the identity piece is so key.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah,
you need to be like, for me, what I would love to see, like my dream app here is, you know, I'm very into music, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I would love to say like, you know, these are 10 people whose taste in music I trust.
Mm-hmm.
I really care about their value.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
And then one of the other ideas is they could stake sats as well. Like imagine where I'm like, all right, you know, Casey has great taste in books, which he does. Yeah, I saw some interesting reads over here beforehand. So I'm willing to stake some sats saying, you know, I think Casey's taste in books is legit.
Uh-huh.
To people who follow me for my taste in books,
right.
Now maybe your reputation can influence their feed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I could lose my stake if they end up getting their set.
All the Web3 stuff is like, a lot of it is just like trash. Like, and but it's trash because it doesn't work. It's not trash because we don't have problems that we need to solve. It's not trash because it doesn't have some ideas about the solution. It's just trash because it doesn't work. But one of the things that is really desperately needed is some sort of like identity, an opt-in, purely digital identity that isn't tied to your real world identity that can exist across multiple sites.
100%.
So you can go like, oh, look, like this person on like Reddit, like helpfully they have a bunch of like product recommendations on Amazon. And I can go when I search for like best tea kettle, I go on Reddit. I find some page with a bunch of reviews. They have some really trustworthy advice. And then like, oh, look, I can go look at their other things that they've reviewed on Amazon. And currently like it's very similar. Like, you have identities in all these different sites, right? On like Google, Amazon, Reddit, whatever. But they're all siloed, right?
100%.
In the same way that you have upvotes and likes on different sites, but they're all siloed, right? So maybe the solution for upvotes and likes is like sats, and the solution for identity is like just some sort of like opt-in digital identity that can exist across multiple sites.
100%.
I also think that would make people a lot happier online, because I feel like if you had a more unified identity across different websites, people wouldn't feel like they can't leave certain sites.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, I'm coming at it from like a user and creator perspective.
Yeah.
But like, I think so many people feel trapped on Instagram, for example. Like, they've built their whole brand there. They've built a following.
Yep.
They've built a relationship with people.
Yep.
And you can't just, like, move that to something else.
Yep.
You can't, even if, you know, Instagram is, you know, fucking you over and not paying you enough or whatever, and there's something better that you'd like to be on, you have to start from the bottom and build back up.
Yep.
And if there was a more, like, centralized is the wrong word, but, like, if there was a unifying factor between, like, your identity one place and another that people could actually see, I think people would be a lot freer to kind of pick the sites that they actually want to spend their time on rather than just, like, where they've kind of gotten trapped.
Yeah.
Basically,
it's weird. Linktree is almost like the version of the like identity across multiple sites.
Yeah,
like you have all these profiles and they all point to your Linktree, and then the Linktree points to all the other ones.
Do people still use Linktree?
Oh yeah.
Not necessarily Linktree, but something like that.
No, Linktree is definitely still.
Yeah,
that's like, everyone's TikTok link is their Linktree.
Yeah.
Really?
So for us, like, I just TikTok made like a static one. If you go to hellpodcast.money. If you go to hell,
I mean,
podcast,
if you're already this far into the episode, you don't need to go to hell
episode,
podcast.
I'm
going to
shill you more.
Shilling coming in four.
If you go to hell podcast.money, that's all of our links. And it looks kind of like a link tree. It looks like a shitty link tree that I made in like 30
And I was
seconds.
Like, can you make it pink, please?
Yeah, no, I made it pink. Everything that has a color, I have to buy in pink. For Aaron, like podcast equipment.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that like most podcast equipment just comes in black and doesn't have a pink version, because otherwise I would be henpacked into
sounds
buying
like y'all should be retro
pink microphones.
Right? A little like spray paint.
No,
or
please don't give her any
just
ideas.
An idea. Like,
I agree.
Maybe some jewels you can bedazzle
in
there.
It's funny,
too.
You can actually tell, you can tell that Casey's getting to know me better over the course of the podcast, because one of our earlier episodes, he got me a stamp. We were doing like a craft store whatever demonstration, and he got me a stamp, and he was like, oh, I didn't want to pick like an ink color that was pink because I didn't want to like stereotype you.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, you don't know me at all.
Now every pink is the only thing that I, and it has to be like sort of a dusty like rose pink.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Stuff out there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Sick. Yeah.
On the identity piece, it's, I think a lot of the time identity is super dystopian, because it's, you know, it's your fiat identity. It's your like government name, you know? It's something that you can't, that you get opted into against your will and you can't opt out of. But cryptography gives us the ability to do fully opt-in identities that are limited, right? That they're not associated to our real name. They're just really generated by a private key that we hold and nobody knows that we hold. And that gives individuals enormous power of selective revelation of information.
Yep.
Like, okay, I can create just like a random identity on Reddit. And if I so choose to, I can also link it to an identity in another place or not, right? So it's actually enormously powerful, that like that ability to like selectively reveal yourself.
Well, I think so. What I'm becoming increasingly convinced of is you need you need a private key to control your money and then your identity. Like those are the two like big fundamental I guess like building blocks for the 21st century. And maybe your own data set and like so you can like train on your own models or like from marketplace models. Maybe that's coming as well. You can imagine you have your own wallet that has money, identity, and like your data set that you can selectively choose to train different models with, right? Now, I think I realize now why this idea, like so many people are in the Bitcoin community are very focused on the identity piece. I mean, I thought it was cool before, but now I see it's like it's critical to this future. You know, Square with TBD, right? They've obviously like gone all in on this sort of DID VC model,
right?
Which I'm not, you know, in the weeds enough to know if that's the right one. But clearly, I mean, they're making all in on that. If you guys haven't been Nostr-pilled or however you say
Nostr.
That's fascinating. And like, that's been like the rabbit hole I've started going down.
For people who don't know, Nostr is just a very lightweight message exchange protocol. You have Nostr relays. And Nostr relays are just like boxes on the internet that are connected to each other. And you, the user, connect to a Nostr relay and upload some a short message, like a tweet is sort of like the sort of way that you'd use it for social media. And then it sends it around to all the other Nostr relays and then users can download it and view it. So it's a very simple protocol for doing sort of like this like message network that people just send messages and you can subscribe to different people's feeds. And you can do a lot with it, like Twitter, for example. Like you could make an alternative
or TikTok.
And
so I think that's cool. And that's also just based on a simple public-private key pair, which is really nice. Or I think a lot of people are sleeping on LSATs, right? Like just the
LSATs?
LSATs are like, so if you have a Lightning node, right? And you can now basically get a special token. I think it's like tied to like the Macaroon concept or whatever. And you can basically say, hey, you know, I want to access this service. But in order to access this service, you know, I get issued a token that allows me to, you know, pay whatever one sat per second, but only the holder of that token can access it. And so this is something that Lightning Labs came out with maybe like a year ago or something, the concert, or maybe more. But people are just starting to play with it a little bit. So basically the idea is you would have your identity tied to a Lightning node. And the question becomes like, is it realistic for everyone to get their own Lightning node or not? But at least for now, I think it's like a pretty, it's nice because if you have a, you know, if you have a Lightning node, you already have a public private key pair.
Right. Yeah, super cool.
Maybe
how did you get into Bitcoin?
Your Bitcoin origin story. Well, where did it start?
Also, one thing I'm also curious about is like, well, like how did people's political views evolve over time? You know, when they were young and then like was when you got into Bitcoin. Tell us about that.
Life story.
Fascinating. Now, that actually is an excellent question. So I got into Bitcoin. Well, I read about Bitcoin in 2011 and I thought it was a very
That's super early. That's very early.
I was a junior in college and I think I read about like Wired magazine, like an article about the dark web or something. And, you know, I thought it was fascinating. And, you know, I had like very cool kind of out there parents, kind of like hippie father, artist, mom that was like entrepreneur, but also very into like astrology and like into all kinds of other esoteric realms. And so let's just say I grew up very open-minded, pretty skeptical of big institutions. But like generally on the political side, I was like pretty hardcore, you know, liberal left, whatever. But yeah, so I thought the idea was interesting, but I thought like, dude, there's no way in hell the government's going to allow this to work. So I just forgot about it. Buy any, not a whale, will never be a whale.
Please don't rubber hose me. Like you're not going to get a lot. You're going to get bus money. It's not worth taking the bus over to wrench me.
Like 10,000 sats or nothing. Anyways. And so, you know, that was cool, but I just forgot about it. And then I became really obsessed with solar energy and I still am. And you know, in 2012, I got really solar pilled. I was interested in doing something to help solve climate change. Thought that was a big problem, but also I just get obsessed with like exponential curves. I just get obsessed with watching like the like rapid decline in cost for various technologies. And the thing was with solar, you know, I started seeing this this incredible thing where for every doubling of cumulative capacity of solar deployed, the levelized cost of energy, which is how you measure in the energy industry, it's how you measure cost per kilowatt hour, was coming down rapidly. And at the time in college, I thought it was like 20, maybe 30%. And so that means like when I went and talked to all my professors and stuff at this time, I don't remember, but maybe solar was like 20 plus cents a kilowatt hour, expensive. For context, coal and natural gas are like 7 cents, right? So that gives you some idea. And so I've told everyone, man, by 2020, solar is going to be the cheapest source of energy in the world. Uh-huh. Like, just going to just destroy everything else. And everyone said, that's impossible. You're crazy. And not only is that exactly what happened, but it was more like 40%. So every doubling of cumulative capacity, the cost came down 40%. Basically, the big lesson is, like, if you see one of these, like, you know, like runaway cost curves, like, never, ever, ever take the under. And so I became really obsessed with solar, started a couple of companies in the space, one that totally floundered doing like crowdfunding for solar, had no business doing that. And then I joined as part of the founding team, this company called Bright, which was, you know, essentially it was YC's first investment in solar and also in Mexico. And so I moved down to Mexico in 2015 and, you know, stayed in Mexico from 2015 to 2020. I would come back and forth the period, but and so I was living down there, you know, very solar pilled. And obviously there's a lot of issues with storage and that's a whole separate conversation, but solar now you can get PPAs signed for like 1.5 cents kilowatt hour. So that's crazy, right? And so anyway, so when I was living down in Mexico, I got back into Bitcoin for two reasons. Number one, you know, the crypto thing was kind of interesting, but like what really clicked for me is that Bitcoin is kilowatt hour coin. Bitcoin is energy backed money, full stop. All the crypto silliness and nonstop, like forget it. Bitcoin is what Buckminster Fuller and Tesla and Edison and Henry Ford, all of these people. I'm a huge Buckminster Fuller fan. And so he talked about this, like, whatever it was, 70 years ago, 60 years ago, some of these other guys even before that. If you think about any system in the universe, right, and you can demarcate it wherever you choose, but any system in the universe, there's one currency always: calories, joules, kilowatt hours. And so energy in, energy out. And so what I started realizing with Bitcoin is like, oh, this is just an energy ledger. That's it. So that was my first realization. The second realization was just living in Mexico for so long. You know, most of my friends there, like my ex-girlfriend was like, her family's like just like stuffing dollars under the mattress. And I was like, yeah, that's probably not a good thing. And most people didn't have access to a payments network, 50% of the country completely unbanked. And I was like, okay, this thing is going to be huge, but people in the US and Europe are going to be the last to understand why. We've had stable currency.
That's right. Yeah.
Financial privilege.
People like who talk about like, who needs Bitcoin? Like we have the dollar, like, if you look at, if you have a map of the world and you look at, you draw every country which has like average above like 6% persistent inflation, which is like pretty high.
Which is like most places.
You get like pockets of white and then huge swaths of red, huge swaths of Asia, of Latin America, of Africa, all have terribly mismanaged currencies. We complain about the dollar hitting like 10% inflation for a few months. Right. Like, I mean, that's absolutely nothing. Right. That like people need Bitcoin.
So anyway, so that's how I got into it. And then my buddy and I in 2017, during the last like crypto craze, we both kind of really became obsessed around then, watched all the Andreas talks, whatever. Shout out to that dude.
He's doing God's work.
At least so that was at that point. He's probably shitcoining now, but
he'll always have a special place in my
Have a special place in my bar. He helped a lot. And then I started reading about the Lightning Network and I was like, oh man. Cause you know, I played with some shitcoins, this and that, but then I realized.
We all have, it's cool.
I'm not trying to compare. It's all right. Like we all get there when we get there. But when I realized, oh my God, Bitcoin can scale. That was the
Eureka
moment. And I started seeing, you know, Bitcoin is like TCP/IP for value. Lightning is going to be something like HTTP. Oh my God.
How does it, so I actually kind of always assumed that VCs had tons of money. But you're a VC and you don't have tons of money. How does that work?
What do you mean by that?
Well, like I'm just curious about the
10,000 cents.
like I thought that like VCs had tons of money that they invested, but no, you are really more like the scout. You are identifying the opportunities. And then your limited partners are the ones who are putting up the majority of the money.
Okay, so I'm happy to talk through like how venture capital works as well. But like, to be clear, at that point I was not in a VC, right? I was you know, a startup founder or whatever.
Gotcha.
And then I got into VC after that. So I was doing some like various projects while in Mexico, working a little bit like consulting with Bitso on payments with Bitcoin. I took Justin Moon's Biddle Bootcamp. Like, so I was like the like super slow kid in the class, but I eventually figured out and finished. But you know, I've always been in and around tech and investing. I thought it was cool. And then I had the opportunity, I joined Version One Ventures and like right before COVID, which was its own thing. So when I was there, we got to do a lot.
What's Version One Ventures? It's another VC?
Version One is a venture capital firm that, you know, they had done like Coinbase and a lot of the crypto stuff. When I was there, we invested in all the Ethereum projects. So I got a lot of firsthand sight of that. And you know, to be clear, I think there's a lot we can learn from the Ethereum community. I think it's built on the wrong rails, but a lot we can learn. And I also did a lot of energy and climate tech stuff there. anyway, so that was really cool for venture capital, but I just could not get out of my head that Bitcoin was going to scale. Mm-hmm. And so I decided, even though I loved, you know, my time there, I like, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity that I couldn't miss. And so I left there and decided to start my own fund. Mm-hmm. And yes, you're right. So I am not like some like independently wealthy dude.
Yeah.
When you hear about dudes that are investing huge amounts of their own money, I mean, they typically probably had some IPO of the company or whatever.
Right.
But most venture capital funds, they raise money, like I do, from limited partners. Mm-hmm. And these limited partners can be individuals, they can be mm-hmm. institutions. And then you basically pool all that capital. And then they basically, you know, entrust the VC to go out there, you know, do what they want.
And that's
invest
you.
It. And that's me.
Yep. And that's the general partner.
That's the general partner.
Gotcha. Right. Uh-huh. Yep.
And so I am the general partner of High Mind Ventures.
Mm. And what do you think makes you good at being a general partner?
Well, I think that if you think about what venture capital is, I mean, there's kind of like three different areas. The first is like the like you said, scouting. You have to find the stuff.
Right.
And what makes me good at that is because I'm like you. Like I'm one of you. Like I believe in this shit. Right.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm not like LARPing about Bitcoin Lightning. Like,
right.
I'm living this shit.
Like, yeah.
I obsess over finding like the smartest founders at the earliest stages. It's just like this is what I do for fun, like on mm-hmm. Twitter and stuff. It's just. Mm-hmm. So I think what makes me good at it is that I enjoy it and mm-hmm. it's fun.
Right.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is it's obviously somewhat sales. Like you have to like, you know, there's a lot of funds out there. You have to uh-huh. be able to explain to a founder, you know, you have to raise your own fund, which is sales to LPs. And then to a founder, why should they work with you? And I think that also comes from a place of being one of them. Like I, you know, a lot of venture funds out there, they'll talk to, and you know, they're doing this as a job. And this is a job for mm-hmm. me, but this is also like, I would do this for free.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that helps me a lot there. And the last thing is supporting companies. And like, I think a lot of the benefit I can bring there is, you know, I've invested in around 25 companies, almost all on the Lightning Network.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I love to help those companies connect with each other. And, you know, I've learned a lot of things about what works and what doesn't from them.
Yeah.
But yeah, at the end of the day, the most important thing is finding the right people.
Right, right. I think the thing that I would really struggle doing is like, I hear about a lot of early stage ideas. You know, I meet people at meetups. And a lot of the time I think like, okay, that definitely will never work. Or I think like, yeah, okay, that has a shot. But really evaluating like, okay, well, what are the chances that they make it? What's the size of the opportunity?
Yeah.
You have to evaluate companies at such an early stage
before they have any
track record, you
right.
know, and you know that maybe they're going to pivot like 2-3 times before
sure.
they hit what they're going to make. How do you do that? How do you do that very fuzzy evaluation on essentially no information?
Well, so exactly. I mean, the reality of the story. So first of all, I was very lucky in that I've been in and around a lot of great startup founders for like a decade. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, I have a sense of like what's you know, what kinds of people tend to go all the way.
Yeah.
And then when I was at version one, I think this makes me a little different than a lot of the other Bitcoin venture capital is
mm-hmm.
like, or other, you know, people that are coming into space, you know, I just got so many fucking reps, dude. Like during COVID,
reps?
Jesus, I've met with many founders, like repetitions.
Oh, what's reps.
Like,
okay. Yeah.
Bench press.
Benching founders.
Oh, you know. Exactly.
Yeah.
Just come on over. and so that, you know, you, and that was really cool for me because
uh-huh.
I got to, you know, also see like which founders in their portfolio had gone all the way. And you know, you do start to see like some trends, right? But at the end of the day, like there's, at this stage I'm investing in, I love to be absolute first money in if I can. I'll do seed stage and all, but I love doing pre-seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're betting on is the space. Like,
mm-hmm.
are they exploring interesting space? Well, I already think I got that answer. And that is yes.
Yeah.
It's enlightening, right? And so if I'm wrong on Lightning, then the fund's a dud. But
uh-huh.
everyone understands that risk. The second question is this the right person or
right.
the right people?
Right.
People. It's all about
That's
people.
What I've heard mm-hmm. over and over people. Again, that like if you see a team, two people, let's say, who are just very smart, have great chemistry, they have an idea that's like not quite there, is a little iffy, like
yeah.
maybe you still invest.
Oh, 100%.
Right? Oh, really? Yeah.
100%. Like right people, right space. Still figuring out an idea
uh-huh.
over meh people with the, like fully fledged idea all day every day.
What is it about the people? Like, is it purely vibe?
Is it purely vibe? I knew vibe was going to be the next word out of your mouth.
Is it vibe the whole way down, or is there? I'm very curious about this.
So I'm on camera. I mean, yeah, at some level, right? Like at this early stage, as you do later stage investing, right? Like
mm-hmm.
if you get into more like. you know, Series B, Series C, and beyond. So if you're, you know, at the stage I'm writing checks, I'm doing, you know, typically doing checks between like 250K and a mil, right? So that's like very early, early stage investing. I mean, a lot of it is vibes because there, I mean, there is no data, right? Like a lot of times it's just two people with an idea. Maybe there's a little bit of data you can see, like they have like an MVP out in the market. Mm-hmm. And that's helpful to see like, okay, are people, but there's still a lot of science, right? Like, yes, a lot of it is like, and listen, I mean, one thing that's going to sound crazy, but as I get older in life, like trusting intuition is everything.
Yeah.
Mm. Like intuition is the single best, signal I think we have for anything in life because we've evolved over a long time. Right. Like we understand so little of how the universe works.
Mm-hmm.
And our rational minds are good. They're excellent tools, but they're tools.
Yeah.
And too many people in our world let the rational mind dictate and the emotional and say, it's always.
Yeah. Way.
So anyway, so I think just like, frankly, I mean, this is going to sound kind of silly, but since I'm on the Hell Money podcast,
yeah, let's go.
I mean, I'm big into meditation, right? And uh-huh. I've been for many, many years. And like, I can tell when I'm meditating versus not, it helps me a lot. Like mm-hmm. if I'm able to like listen to my own internal signal or not.
Yeah.
And I'm also not going to say I always get this shit right. Like we'll see if my portfolio is great or not in you know, 5, 6, 7 years. But I think that what you're looking for, you can tell usually within a couple of minutes of talking to someone, A, does this person have the intellectual horsepower, period.
Mm-hmm.
You just know that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is this person the kind of person that can see several steps ahead? I'll give you an example. When you talk to Lalu from Lightning Labs, and Elizabeth as well, Elizabeth is an absolute, you know, beast.
Uh-huh.
When you talk to Lalu and you listen to him explain, you're just like, oh my, like this guy has thought, everything that I've thought of, he's thought of that plus four steps.
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, okay, check box.
Yep, yep.
Then the question is, you know, is there the right person on the team? Like Elizabeth, I think Lightning Labs is a great example
mm-hmm.
that can get shit done.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times you can have the genius, right?
Right.
And the genius is amazing,
yep.
but the genius ain't enough.
Yeah.
Because you got to get that product to market. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And you got to have somebody that's...
This is literally a Casey and I... I told Casey I need to start having meetings with him about ordinals because I'm like, you have the ideas, but we need to structure you. Like, these are the tasks you need to be focusing on.
Do I see an ordinals founding team
yeah, exactly.
and potential investor right at the table? You saw it here first, baby. You saw it here first.
Could be.
Unicorn. Could be, actually. Actually.
Yeah,
But yeah, but that's the thing is like, and from that, you know, you want someone on the team that is, frankly, look, everything in life comes down to, do you understand something about the world other people don't? Can
mm-hmm.
you build it? And can mm-hmm. you sell it? That's
mm-hmm.
it.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
I love this. I love this vibe-based investing.
Yeah. I don't want to get like hashtag
no,
vibe-based
investing. No, I mean, what you said is totally legitimate.
But it's, you know,
it speaks to, I think, what like you already, you're right. Like your intuition is such a strong tool.
Yes.
And you can just tell when you're on something and you just know.
The difference between your sort of logical mind is your logical mind is very good at taking small, discrete pieces of information and like figuring out like what they point to and how they work together. But your intuition is what filters all of the data that you're getting and
exactly.
all of your life experience and like gives you just like a fuzzy notion, but that is maybe like in some ways less precise than your logical brain, but it just takes so much more data as input.
And I would argue it can be way less fuzzy. You can train yourself to have a stronger, to be more in touch with it.
Totally. Mm. And I think this maybe slightly tying back to our conversation earlier about like search engines and like social media and whatnot. But I think like, we're in this age of information where any information, data, whatever that you want that's available, you can access. The challenge is like, how do you process that? And how do you decide what information is important or valuable or useful to you?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is where like your intuition, your lived experience, like just sort of the person that you've become comes into play is like,
right.
how do you weigh, if you're just being overloaded constantly with stimula, data, whatever. How do you actually filter that in a way that's useful
totally.
To you?
And I want to be very clear. Like there are certainly many different cases. If I'm making later stage investments, then it is more rational. But there are many
right.
cases where I'll use rationality, but I use it as a tool. For example,
mm-hmm.
I see there's really interesting, smart people. Great.
Mm-hmm.
They meet the checkbox. Now the question is, and the specific idea I'm not as worried about at my stage, right? Like it matters. But what I'm really interested in, are they asking the right questions in
mm-hmm.
a space where those questions could yield something massive?
Right.
So this is where I'll use my rational brain, which is to go and do like a tremendous amount of market research to figure out what are all the comps for different companies. For example, you know, when I invested in Stack News, a lot of people are like, oh man, like it seems like a high valuation for what it is. I'm like, not at all. Like,
mm-hmm.
have you seen the valuations for things like Reddit, Stack Overflow, Quora, like they're all multi-billion dollar companies and should be worth a hell of a lot more if they knew what they were doing, if they understood they were building a search engine, if they understood that they should be open and interoperable. And so to be very clear, and especially all my LPs out there listening, like the rational piece, salute, it is very important, but it's a check to understand, are you playing in the right space? And do you, you know, another thing that I always check for with founders is like, all right, let's see the roadmap, right? Like, and I know the roadmap's going to change, but you want to see that they have a clear process and you want to see how they kind of change through that.
Right.
So that kind of the rational piece of it and the market research, and then you do references, right? Understand you get your vibe, but you also, you know, you want to check like, how did this person, you know, do with this manager at a different company and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's the way that I think about like my STEM PhD is like learning about science and how science works and learning to think like logically, empirically, et cetera. Is like a tool, exactly what you said. It's like a tool that I use that is on my tool belt of many other ways of understanding the world. And I'm so glad that I have that, I've developed that understanding, because a lot of people don't have even that, right? They can't think about things rationally or logically, and they can't like weigh data or figure out how to find that information or whatever.
Right.
But like that is one piece of the puzzle, and you need to have that piece. It's a crucial piece, but it's viewing it as like a tool instead of the whole package.
Right. And if I could just add one more thing on there. That you know with certain founders. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I have this a little bit with my own VC fund as well. You ask what else you're looking for. The best founders in my experience, they're obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
Obsession. Absolutely obsession.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's not about the money. It's not about the fame. It's not about any of that. It's a fucking obsession.
Yeah.
Like, you have to see this thing in the world. And often if you ask them, what is this going to look like in 10 years or whatever, they may not get it exactly right because I know things are going to change, but they'll tell you some vision of like, this is the way the world is going to look. And you're like, and you listen to them and you'd be like, fuck yes, this is the way the world is going.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's fucking go.
Let's fucking go. No, I pinch myself. The fact that I do this as a job is like beyond ridiculous. And like, yeah, I love it.
It's amazing. I love your vibe. I trust your judgment. So we are at almost exactly an hour. Is there anything else we definitely need to cover?
I definitely want to just hear you rapid fire shill your portfolio companies that you're most excited about.
Oh man.
Like 10 seconds of portfolio company. Like chill.
I need the whole list in front of me. I should look that more.
You're like, if anybody doesn't get mentioned, it's not because I don't love you. It's not because I'm not very excited about what you're building.
Okay. I can do some shilling.
Yeah. Some shilling. Yeah. Shill it up.
All right. I mentioned I've got about 25 portfolio companies. They're not all public yet, but when I think about investing, I think about, you know, I invest broadly, let's say in two different categories, with lots of subcategories.
Mm-hmm.
The categories broadly are infrastructure and applications.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And I've done more infrastructure to date because I think that we're more at that point. And then I'll probably do more applications over time because I think Lightning will become more consumer ready. I think that's happening. We're just leaving kind of like beta phase. And so when I think about on the infrastructure side, you know, I've kind of done a full spectrum of infrastructure investing around payments. When I think about full spectrum, what does that mean? Well, it means I'll do everything from the fully custodial and regulated and like, you know, completely just, you know, PayPal, but plugged into Lightning.
Uh-huh.
I'll do the fully non-custodial.
Mm-hmm.
And an example of the fully non-custodial would be something like Breeze, which is working on how do you everyone have a node on their phone.
Yep.
And they have some really interesting things they're working on with, you know, their API and all this other stuff, you know, in the future. And then I do stuff.
Breeze is a mobile Lightning wallet, right?
Breeze is a mobile Lightning wallet with the hopes to be a lot more. But the idea is, you know, can you provide Lightning payment infrastructure in a way that's completely non-custodial? Therefore, you're not dependent on any government body, any corporate body, you know, to process that payment for you.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, I do a bunch of these kind of like custodial investments. And the custodial investments basically are like by region, because my thesis is that in different regions, you're going to have different regulations, right? And so I tend to invest in regions with a lot of people, right? And so far I've invested in companies like Ibex Mercado, which has done all the payment processing in El Salvador and is moving into other regions in Latin America. I've done, you know, Pouch.ph, which is a company I'm very bullish on. They do all the payments into and within the Philippines using the Lightning Network.
Which is a massive country for remittances.
Bro.
Insane flows of cash going to the Philippines.
And it's not just remittances. There's like $10 billion or something like that a year in remittances. Huge country. By the way, Mexico is the big prize. but with Pouch, they're also, it's like, Now, I wonder what you could do if you have a tiny, you know, global currency that you could pay anyone that speaks English to do whatever random task. Oh, wait, that's all in the Philippines, right?
Uh-huh,
your VAs, your IT and stuff.
Yep.
So I just see that the Philippines is going to explode. I'm very bullish on that one. I did another investment in Southeast Asia called Neutron Pay, which is very focused on Vietnam and other kind of areas in Southeast Asia.
Very cool.
I've done Bitnob, which is focused on Nigeria.
Awkward name a little bit, Bitnob, you know?
I have some, I'm not going to say on air, but it's those guys are great. It's a funny name. and then I just did another one, which I don't know if I can announce yet, but I'm pretty excited about. So those are some of the more like centralized companies. And then there's this kind of like middle ground, which is companies that, you know, there is some centralization, but who holds the keys is more distributed. Right.
Right.
And so that would be, you know, like Deloitte, I recently led their seed extension. Deloitte has this very interesting model where it's open source banking software, but you can essentially, for the Bitcoin treasury, attach that. You can have, you know, M of N signers. And so you could, for example, have your community be the signatories. And so maybe, for example, I have trust in you guys and like Mark or someone. And so I say, okay, well, I trust the three of you to custody my funds, but not Wells Fargo or something like that. Similarly, I recently invested in the Fediment round.
Yeah, that's dope.
Shout out to Casey right here, the guy that Fediment pilled me. seriously, by the way.
I think I Fediment pilled a lot of people with that blog post a while ago.
Straight up, by the way, Casey, like your blog, you drop alpha like crazy. Crazy. If y'all want to follow him, this man, Rotomore.com.
Rotomore.com/blog. There's also like some really questionable stuff on there. My
thigh photos.
My fiction. No, I mean Monko Wonko.
We'll leave it at that.
My fiction.
Oh, wait a second. I'm gonna read some Casey fiction.
It's all there.
It's all there. Yeah.
Have you read this?
Oh, I've read it.
Even better. So, seriously though, this man's
leaking alpha all over the place.
I don't know what else is being leaked in these stores, but so you got that, by the way, and you inspired me on another company as well. Lightning Bridge. Lightning Bridge is a company that essentially it's like Stripe for the metaverse. They're building Lightning Network bridges from Bitcoin to Solana and all the Ethereum rollups, which essentially is going to mobilize John Pfeffer's 2017, I believe, utility token thesis, which basically says if all the Web3 shit wants to exist, fine, but Bitcoin's only money.
How do I have anything to do with that?
Because you posted a thing saying Lightning Network to other
Lightning exchanges, essentially. Yes. Yeah,
that's exactly what this is. You should talk to this guy, by the way. It's dope. Lightningbridge.io.
Awesome. I don't think anybody read that.
I read your shit. I liked your email, but like seriously, this man drops out. Like my job, you asked me what my job is. My job is to find the internet geniuses. Casey is one.
Yeah, I love
the
internet quasi geniuses.
That also write questionable fiction.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's kind of some of that stuff. And then I do other infrastructure, which is like supporting the actual Lightning node runners. Right. And so in this case, you know, I invested in recently David Marcus, who ran Diem and Facebook Libra. He launched a company called Lightspark, which is really focused on Lightning infrastructure, like for node runners. Obviously, I invested in Lightning Labs. Incredibly bullish on that team. I spent a week with them recently, and oh my god, these guys are the truth. I'm really excited about Taro. I think that's really cool. I've invested in early company. A couple of these. One is a liquidity marketplace called Lightning Network Plus. And it's just like, it's interesting because it's one of these kind of like random, like really smart dudes I met on the internet who, you know, he's done, I think like 920 BTC volume in swaps for Lightning Network right now, which is like by far the most. It's just like a swap site. So I think there's an interesting opportunity.
Swap main chain to Lightning and vice versa?
Or
buy inbound liquidity?
Well, it's what it actually is. It's like, you know, like some of the Plebnet people do these like ring of fires or like, you know, whatever, like hexagons
of fire.
Hexagons of fire. His site's basically where all that happens.
Oh, okay, cool.
And so he facilitates these like liquidity rings or liquidity swaps. Anyway, so there's some interesting stuff coming down the road with that. Let's see. Bolt Explorer, Algae has this company, which is really cool. He does a lot of great infrastructure as well. He'll basically do a monitoring service for your Lightning nodes and also tell you like sort of like liquidity insights. So anyways, I do a lot of this infrastructure stuff. And now I'm starting to do more applications because I think we're finally getting to that point. This is where things get exciting, right?
Yeah.
And so on the application side, this is where I'll do stuff like Stacker News. I am incredibly bullish on Kian and Stacker News. you know, Albie, I'm a huge fan of, and like those guys, they have like the MetaMask for Lightning, mm-hmm. and they're enabling all kinds of good stuff there. Let's see, what other kinds of applications? Well, I'm looking for someone to build this Lightning search engine. So if that's you, person in the audience listening to the Hell Money podcast, hit me up at Max A. Webster.
You know, they have good vibes if they're listening this far into our podcast.
Yeah. Exactly. Like,
they're in the know.
To the six people right there right now. Like, if this is you, seriously, hit me up.
Yeah.
But I want to do a lot more of these kind of applications.
I'm very excited about the applications phase of Lightning, because I think that it will really, really click for a lot of people. So a lot of people, they aren't really interested in money,
right,
per se. They're not really interested in finance per se. They've seen a lot of like crypto bullshit that seems all very like circular, all like sort of doesn't have any real connection to the real world.
Ponzi schemes.
Yeah, Ponzi schemes, right? Like, and they have this like circular quality, like finance, it's finance all the way down. There's no real world activity. But, and so rightly, I think a lot of people are just like, don't really care. And maybe they're not really like very orange pillable. They're not people who are really going to get the core value proposition of Bitcoin, or mm-hmm. going to get like super obsessed with it like we are. But I think that there's going to be some Lightning powered applications that start to become very popular, and people are going to realize, oh, okay, like Lightning is really a tool to do other things.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Lightning is a tool to do things that are really unrelated to Bitcoin. You know, it's not about stacking sats. You should definitely stack sats, but it's about like, it's about making, unlocking transactions between people, like where one half of the transaction is a good or a service or whatever, and the other half of the transaction is a Lightning payment. And that will get a whole lot of people interested and excited about Lightning in a way that those people will never be interested and excited about Bitcoin.
Bro, it's mm-hmm. just value for the internet, a native yep. currency yeah. for the yep. internet, and right. a native payment rails. Like,
right.
Look, we're all to some extent at least nerds here.
Yeah.
All of us.
Yeah.
And so that's great. But like I was talking to someone, like the 1-2% of us that are pinning Reddit to the end of every search, like mm-hmm. it's never going to be everybody.
Yeah.
Fine. But what everyone is interested in is just like, I just want to earn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I just want it to like work. Yep. And ideally, if I live in an emerging market, in a currency that doesn't, you know, yep. lose all of its value by next month.
And, totally. And people also just want all of the services that they use to be better. They yeah. want to be like, yeah, I want a service that I want to pay, you know, 10 cents a day to use instead of horrible butchered ads, you know, bloatware, right? Mm-hmm. Like every time I do, a lot of the time when I do a thumbnail, I'll search for some clips. I'll type in like some, you know, Lightning icon transparent background PNG into Google.
Reddit.
Yeah, to try to find some clip art. And I find these sites that are often actually very helpful. These like dumps, these like PNG clip art dump sites. And the UI is terrible because they make their money on ads. And it's just like choked with ads and like weird buttons. And you can eventually get the clip art that you want. I just want to pay a few sats for the clip art. And they want to sell me clip art for a few sats. They'd right. much rather do it that way than have to deal with like ads and header bidding and all this like insane stuff. So once it like unlocks that, where it's like, oh yeah, I can just get like all my shit just works a little bit better and like easier and more convenient. Like people want to earn, but they also want to spend things on like good products.
And again, I want to just like throw out there like the two big categories I'm most excited about. Like we talk about a little bit better, but imagine you're a kid in Nigeria. Right mm-hmm. now. Like it's not a little bit better. It's literally the difference between can I participate in an online economy
right.
or not?
Right.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it's like literally yeah. zero yeah. or one.
Right? Absolutely.
And then two is like these completely radical new experiences that we can't even imagine. Like you couldn't have imagined Twitter before the Web 2.0 movement. Mm-hmm. Right? So
right.
like now as you start thinking like, hey, like, you know, am I going to get just like radically better music recommendations? Like that would be really cool.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Right.
Can I ask you guys something?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are y'all stoked about right now?
Hell Money Podcast.
Yeah, Hell Money Podcast.
Besides the obvious,
Ordinals. I'm pretty stoked on Ordinals.
Wait, you like Ordinals?
Yeah. I don't know if you've heard. Yeah. I was actually thinking about how the Ordinals naming scheme is really nice. Mm-hmm. Like it has some like nice accidental properties. Like the names get longer and then get shorter, mm-hmm. which means that you don't have this problem where all the short names go early when the market is immature. Like they'll get unlocked in like 2080 or something. When the ordinals market is like either like totally dead or there's like a healthy market to buy it.
So what's the alpha drop? What should I buy? What names?
There kind of is no, I mean, okay, so here's the alpha drop. You should get a mining, you should find a mining pool and you should tell them, hey, like I want to buy the first sat of every block. And I'm willing to pay you for that because those are the uncommon, rare, epic, and legendary ordinals. And if you can work out deals with those mining pools, you can start stockpiling rare ordinals that will eventually be worth nothing. But
so real question, is there a startup brewing here?
Well, I mean, I don't know. We've talked about doing like an ordinals marketplace or some way to mm-hmm. like to do like to enable people to buy and sell ordinals. And I have thought that sounds awful that I haven't want to do that. We had a conversation where you're like, yeah, what about like an ordinals NFT exchange? And I was like, that sounds fucking terrible. I never want to do that.
Why? What?
But like I'm sort of making more progress. And like as I like meet people who I can imagine doing it with, mm-hmm. then it becomes, you know.
TBD. Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm excited. You heard it here first.
Yeah, but things outside of ordinals, man, I don't know. I'm really excited about easy multisig.
Okay.
I like me and Rheindahl, like the Twitter nim, we did a Twitter space this morning where we set up a multisig wallet between the two of us.
With what?
Nunchuck.
Oh, I love Nunchuck.
Yeah, yeah.
These guys are dope.
And this made me, I actually think, I was thinking the whole time that we were doing it, this is incredibly subversive technology.
Yeah.
This is like the ability of two, like, I don't know. I think maybe, I don't know where he lives. I don't know what his name is. I don't know what he really looks like. We can pool funds together and jointly exercise like where those funds go. We can coordinate over the internet with real value in a way that was previously, that kind of ability was really only available to large companies that could form these like trust relationships with each other and sort of be able to rely on the legal system to enforce when things go wrong. But the ability to actually like literally just like the three of us being able to do a 2 of 3 multisig gives power to the little guy in such an insane way that we can coordinate with like no public information, like anonymously over the internet on businesses trying to accomplish our goals, being weird subversives. Like it's deeply subversive technology, just like simple multisig.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And that getting, the big part of that is that just needs to get way easier. And Nunchuck is a sort of,
I play with Nunchuck. It's a beautiful UI.
Yeah. It's great. Yeah. What about you?
I'm kind of bullish on Casey, to be honest. Just me organizing Casey.
Maybe you can point me in a more productive direction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I think we should wrap it up because, yeah, we've done like 1:10. Thank you so much. Is there anything else? Where can people find you? Like, yeah, what are you?
You can find me on Twitter, Max A. Webster. You can find me on Stacker News, mm-hmm. Max A. Webster. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been a great conversation.
Thank y'all. This is fun.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
See you next time.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Hasta pronto.